That's right. We're looking back at another forgotten sci-fi gem of years past. The Pete Travis directed, Carl Urban starring mega flop, Dread 2012. But before we get into what we're doing, let's briefly ask the more important question. How you doing, buddy?
Oh, I'm so tired. I'm so... Do you know what? Let me tell Patreon exclusively what's going on.
Yeah, man.
It's just tiring, man. But yeah, tired.
I can imagine.
How about you, buddy?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good.
Yeah?
Let me tell Patreon real quick.
Shall we sum up the show a little bit?
Yes, buddy. We're going to give you all the juice, dear listener, of how and why this character exists in the first place.
We're going to get into the satirical take on totalitarianism in this movie being almost entirely missed.
Why this movie flopped like a geriatric Magikarp.
And why this movie, much like One Night in Paris, continues to gain notoriety. Ooh. Does it?
Kind of.
A bit.
I mean, I've seen something about it on the internet recently. It's still there.
Yeah.
Just go with it, buddy. But most importantly, bud.
What does Dread 2012 really mean?
What's it really mean?
I think we've got the answer this week. I've written a breakdown for us.
Let's get into it.
New listeners, this is your spoiler warning. What we do, we take the next 2 minutes and we just go through act one, two, and three of the film, tell everybody exactly what happens. So later on in the show, everybody knows what's happening. If you've not seen this film in years, you're about to be reminded. If you've never seen it and you're never planning to, you're about to find out. If you're one of the people that's planning to see this over 10-year-old film and don't want spoilers, just pause.
Pause. Go watch the film.
Come back.
There it is.
Start us off, Ben. I've written act titles for you.
You have. Look at this. I love this. All right. Act one. Basically Manchester. Welcome to Mega City 1. I don't know why I've gone southern. Welcome to Mega City 1, a sprawling post-apocalyptic concrete nightmare where 800 million people live in constant fear, crammed into skyscraper slums and numbed by television, drugs and existential despair. Crime is so rampant that traditional courts have given up entirely, outsourcing the entire justice system to heavily armed fascists on motorbikes known as judges.
Basically Manchester.
Our hero? All right. Our hero is Judge Dredd, a man genetically engineered to never question the system, remove his helmet, or smile. He speaks like a gravel pit with a badge. And today, he's babysitting a psychic rookie named Anderson through her final assessment.
Yeah.
Their assignment?
Mm-hmm.
A triple homicide in a 200-story housing block called Peachtrees. What could possibly go wrong with that, Rob?
Act two. Fucking everything, actually.
Yeah.
The local crime lord, Mama, former sex worker, current drug baron, and part-time flayer of faces, gets wind of their presence and decides the best way to handle two law enforcement officers is to lock down the entire building and order everyone inside to kill them.
Yeah.
Dredd and Anderson suddenly find themselves trapped in an exact retelling of The Raid with guns instead of fists.
Yeah.
Murdering extras who all dress like Mad Max villains and can't aim for shit.
Kinda.
As body parts fly and slow motion gunfights turn murder into music videos, Anderson proves she's not just an unreasonably attractive rookie. She's a psychic badass with a conscience, unlike her walking embodiment of state violence mentor.
Act three. A million lives mean nothing to me, Vienna.
Oh, Vienna.
Mm-hmm. I was waiting for that. By Act 3, Dredd has murdered his way up the tower like a fascist Donkey Kong, and Mama is down to her last goons and her last nerve. That's pretty good. She threatens to blow up the entire block with a dead man's switch linked to explosives on the bottom floor. Dredd throws her out a window. Like Rob with a career, because whether people live or die doesn't matter to him. Only the law.
Yeah.
The building reopens. Dredd decides Anderson has passed her evaluation by virtue of surviving. And the film ends the way it began, with absolutely no hope for this crumbling society, but a strong sense that at least someone is murdering back. Justice has been served, covered in rat shit and broken teeth. Bon appetit.
Yeah.
I like this.
Did you enjoy the film?
Dude, I'm not going to lie. This is my first time watching this film.
Really?
It's my first time watching it. I've seen it like when it's like in passing, you know, it's been on when I've been doing other shit. If it's like at a party or chatting or whatever it is.
It's one of those ones where it's been on TV and you've kind of joined in halfway through and gone, this is happening.
Yeah, it's just kind of been on. I've never really paid attention to it all. Watching it this time through, fucking mint, mate.
Isn't it?
It's fucking mint.
Isn't it?
Dude, I
can't blame you for not having seen it. We'll get into why.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to back you up on it wholeheartedly because I'll just reaffirm whatever it
you are proof of the points that I have.
Because I hated the marketing. I hated the way it looked. And I was like, well.
Funny that.
Yeah.
Funny that.
Mad that, isn't it? But yeah, wicked film, man. I had such a blast. It's a relatively short film. It mm-hmm. feels much shorter.
Yeah.
There's no massively over complex.
Nope.
Like law building or anything like this, you're just in, and yeah. you're like, it's essentially a fucking ride along.
Yeah,
that's all it is.
It's there's
nothing else to it.
It's that, but set in the future.
Yeah, it's mint.
It's a single day. It keeps the stakes relatively small.
Yeah,
you know, we're not saving the world.
Yeah,
there's a lot of people saved. Don't get me wrong, but it's a day. It's one day in a police officer's life.
Exactly.
I said hero in the breakdown.
You did?
Confusing because he is. A fascist executioner.
He's not right. a hero at all. He's an anti-hero.
He's actually the definition of an anti-hero. Yeah. The number of times I see anti-hero used for a real hero who just is a bit grumpy sometimes, and you're like, that's not an anti-hero.
That's just a grumpy hero.
That's just a grumpy hero.
Right, okay.
It comes from a British comics publisher called 2000 AD,
mm-hmm.
and they were... sort of formed in the late 70s, but they had their real... I mean, you're the comics guy. When would you say 2000 AD's heyday was? Late 80s?
Late 80s, early 90s.
Early 90s. And it's that like proper big. Gritty... You got to think, like, what was big in the early 90s? You had Todd McFarlane's Spawn.
Mm-hmm.
You had the Rob Liefeld set of, like, Bad Feet, but everything was super gritty, like...
Yeah.
So when the writer John Wagner teamed up with Carlos Esquerra, Esquerra mm-hmm. in 1976, they were in England and Margaret Thatcher was Prime Minister.
Yeah.
Now, what that meant was a time. Right. For our American listeners, the 70s in the UK were interesting. We had the miners' strike.
Interesting.
Watch the film Pride if you want a good movie about what the miners' strike was. But essentially, it was the working class unions trying to get a decent wage and the government going, nah.
Basic human rights.
Yeah. We had war in Northern Ireland and we had the Brixton riots.
Yeah.
This led to the UK government passing a law called the Police and Criminal Evidence Act, which basically allowed the police to stop a person found loitering if they suspected they had the intent to commit a crime.
Yes.
Rather than the belief that they had committed a crime.
Yes.
So you could now stop and search people,
mm-hmm.
basically for any reason.
Yeah.
And her government as a whole was based around policies of like law and order, individual responsibility, state pride.
Mm-hmm.
Anti-unions, anti-collectivism, with like a strong emphasis on hard policing.
Yeah.
So she basically wrote Megacity One for them.
Yeah, essentially, yeah. They were living in Megacity One.
Right.
Yeah.
And she's always been a polarizing figure because her and Reagan, American listeners, you want to think she's about the same time as Reagan, and they were very similar. They had similar goals. It's like, let's not let the government step in and do anything. You're on your own. The police are going to be there. They're going to crack down on crime.
Yep.
Just say no to drugs. It's all your fault.
Yeah.
And let's remove all regulations on the markets. Hey, it's great. It's money time.
For
certain people it was. Yeah, if you want to think like American Psycho came out of the rush of Wall Street money that came from their policies, right?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you had films like Dirty Harry, Bad Lieutenant.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the maverick within the law. And Judge Dredd is kind of the horrifying conclusion of this
so
environment.
So happy you mentioned Dirty Harry. I've got a point on this.
Ah, nice. And he's sort of only heroic. And the reason I use heroic, it's only that his extremity is only slightly less than the criminals he's facing. So like Judge Dredd is an awful person.
Yeah.
And in the comics, he's fighting mutants, rapists, people who skin people for fun.
Yeah.
Rogue AI.
Tyrannosaurus Rex is called Satanus.
Right.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's the sort of shit that he was up like, against.
It's a world that's so extreme that he becomes a hero by comparison
exactly.
to what he's fighting.
Yes, that's right? exactly it.
Right.
Yeah.
Pat Mills, who was the original editor of 2000 AD, said, its roots are very strongly embedded in a punk attitude. All the stories that had potential had to be subversive from the beginning.
Right.
And I bring up punk for a lot of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
1983, Ruth Bethke writes a novel called Cyberpunk.
Yeah.
Which is the first use of the term.
Yeah.
A year later, we get Neuromancer by William Gibson, which is like amazing. Sets the mold.
Yeah.
They create that genre of fiction, which we're almost kind of bored now by, with Cyberpunk 2077, Blomkamp, all that sort of stuff.
About technology. I like that you're saying bored of this. Blomkamp's done some fucking blinders.
It's all blinders, but we're like, we've ingested it now. It's not like, wow, look at this bold new direction. Okay. It's like
we've become accustomed to it.
There we go. Okay. There we go.
I was going to say bored of it's a strong one.
But it's the era we're in. Alan Moore gets a lot of praise for writing Watchmen about how superheroes are ultimately fascists because they have the ultimate power. They have the ultimate right to decide.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of years earlier, he'd done the same with V for Vendetta.
Yeah.
And this is V for Vendetta, Watchmen, Cyberpunk, Neuromancer, just writ large.
Yeah.
But years before.
Yeah.
This is the late 70s.
Yeah, dude.
They did it first, and they did it with incredible imagery, beautiful art, and like hyper-violent stories for the time.
For the time?
For now.
Bro, go back and read it, man. It's fucking outrageous, some of the shit that's in those books.
Right.
I said to you before we started recording, I was like, I tried to dig out a couple of the old copies of 2008 that I've got. I found about 150 of them because at some point I went through a phase of like people that were selling comic book collections. I just used to buy them all.
Nice.
And then would like go through them, and there'd always be the like weirdest shit
mm-hmm.
that I'd find in there. There's a comic book called is it Kabuki?
Nice.
It's like a weird Japanese style story,
right,
about Kabuki.
Amazing.
Yeah. And it's essentially just a Bukkake geisha turned ninja.
Amazing.
It's weird.
That is an odd story.
Do you know what the most annoying thing is?
Right.
It's a 4 comic book run.
Yeah.
I've got number 1, 2, and 4.
Oh!
3 was apparently so interesting that this comic book collector was not willing to part with the 3rd issue. I'm not sure I would have wanted it, to be honest.
I think it was mostly, it started as 20 pages and only about 2 of them still worked by the sounds of it.
1,000%. It's just one lump.
Yeah.
It's just that it's
a chopping board.
It's literally, yeah. Yeah. It looks like it's been doused in resin. You know what I mean? Like, but so I went through these phases and I found like all my old 2080 comic books and I read a couple stories like before coming here. And, they're insane.
They're wild,
right? They are wild compared to the normal sort of.
But it's a comic book British standard. UK homegrown. At the same time as punk was kind of dying off in music, they went, right, let's do it for comics. Let's just be extreme.
Yeah.
Middle finger to authority, middle finger to government, middle finger to the Comics Code of America.
Oh mate, they took every rule and regulation and just went, nah.
right.
And I love every second of it.
Difficult thing to try and turn into a movie.
I think nowadays it would be much easier. Back when
1995 wasn't the year, was it?
No, it was not. Like, it was not at all.
Sylvester Stallone couldn't do it.
I don't think he's as much to blame
no.
as the writers, because I know that Sylvester Stallone had issues with the movie himself.
I've read the quote. He's just like, I love the comics. I love the world.
He did not
do that justice.
No, and he was very aware of it, but he's also sort of bound by
promotional.
Do I keep contract. My career? Do I stand up for...
You never want to be the guy that shit talks the movie that you're currently promoting, because you just won't get hired again.
Snow White.
Right.
You end up being in Snow White.
Yeah.
it's fucking stupid. But yeah, I don't think he knew what he was doing, and he wasn't happy about it. And then 2012 was maybe a better time.
We'll get to that.
Better than 95.
It's got its own problems. Yeah.
The thing that I love about this movie, like one of my other all-time favorite movies, Starship Troopers.
Right.
One of the best films that's ever been made.
100%.
Starship Troopers takes a look at the military complex, laughs in its face.
Yeah.
Literally pure satirical.
By doing the thing to the point of ridiculousness.
Exactly.
It highlights the ridiculousness of the thing as it exists.
They go to the most extreme part.
Yeah.
The most extreme point that you can go to.
Yeah.
These bugs killed my mom. I'm going to fucking murder them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
This is the whole thing. It was completely missed on so many people.
1,000%. And no one understood why it was that silly. They're like, well, this isn't serious.
But the amount of people that were like, fuck yeah, to Starship Troopers. And it's like, buddy, if that's you, you've missed it.
Right.
I'm sorry to say you've missed it.
Right.
Dread, the exact same thing, man. The satire was lost on this, right? So I've gone back and I've read a few reviews from when this was released.
Right, okay.
And it is glaringly obvious that a few certain people
just don't have the media literacy,
missed it completely. Right. And they were just sort of like, well, this is just glorifying horrific acts in the name of a dictatorship. And it's like, right. Yes,
that's the point.
That is the point.
Yeah.
But also, it's not a celebration of that fact.
You're supposed to see it being celebrated and recoil.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is.
That's the point.
You've got it. Yeah. If you're on the side of Dredd, I'm sorry, buddy, you've missed it. I'm sorry, buddy, you've missed it. Dredd's this sort of like anti-hero with an unwavering devotion to the law, right?
Yeah.
There is no budge in him whatsoever.
That's all that matters. The lives of the civilians in that tower block at the end of the movie don't register.
Exactly.
She's broken the law. I'm going to kill her. If her death leads to the death of everyone else, so be it.
Who cares? Yeah. Don't break the law. Oh, I'm sorry, this pregnant woman has stolen a loaf of bread. 5 years jail. Oh, you don't want to go? Dead.
Yeah. Right.
End of. Resisting arrest. Dead. End of. He has no give when it comes to justice at all. You are the right.
Mm-hmm.
You do right or you pay the price. That is the be all end all. And we've seen this in Starship Troopers, right? Came out as like an over the top, stereotypical machismo hoorah movie. And everyone was fucking mad on board for it. But it's such a tongue in cheek celebration in the film universe that it's painfully obvious now watching it.
Yeah.
That it is absolute waffle.
I only watched it as a kid on VHS.
Yeah.
And as a kid, I didn't get that it was satire.
Same.
As an adult watching it.
Oh, yeah, 1,000%.
It is incredibly obvious.
Yeah.
The idea that the general critics, people whose job it was to watch films, watched that film and took what 10-year-old me took from it.
Yeah, dude,
is a terrifying indictment of film criticism.
There is a specific moment in my life, in my teen years, where I used to watch Starship Troopers regularly, one of my favorite DVDs, one of my favorite VHS, fucking wore it thin on that shower scene, bud. Ridiculous. Dina Meyer called me out on that.
And she did.
I've never gotten over it.
I've got it on video somewhere.
Yeah, I've never recovered
just being
from
like,
that.
You paused it at that moment, didn't you? And you went, no, yes, no, 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 yes, no.
What?
Yes.
No. Yeah. Yeah, I did. So I had this on VHS and I was watching it. There was a poignant moment in my teen years where I was talking to a friend at school who was dead set on being in the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And I just could not get my head around it
right.
as to why this career choice was appealed. Like, it was the most appealing thing on the planet. Because like back in that day, I was like, fuck it, I'm going to be an artist. I'm going to live in a van. I'm going to travel the world. I'm going to sell art to everyone. It's going to be mint. Do you know what I mean? I was smoking a lot of weed
at the time. So someone being like in the Navy, you're like, all right, man.
All right, calm down. What's
We're
this
mates.
For?
What's this about?
What's this about? Where are we going with this? And he started talking about it. And I'm like, oh, okay. Hold on.
Right.
So you're like...
Yeah.
You're like those dudes.
Mm.
I see now. Okay.
Right.
And then I started to watch Starship Troopers in a whole new light because I realized that these people actually exist. And I'm like, oh my God.
Right.
This is like a real thing.
Yeah.
And then watching Starship Troopers, this is a massive piss take.
Yeah.
Dredd, updated version of this. Dude, I watched this the first time through and I just got taken back to so many situations. I got into an argument in a pub once with someone who told me, he was like, I fucking hope there's always a war because then I'll always have a job. And that one sentence has never left my brain. And it I don't know why. I think about it all the time.
It comes back to we just watched Warfare by Alex Garland.
We fucking did, buddy. By Alex Garland.
Am I right? So when I say Alex Garland wrote this movie, some of you listening will know who we're talking about. Ben, I know you do because we watched Warfare and it's our favorite film of the month. You love the guy, I love the guy. For those that need a little bit more info, here's what you can say down the pub next time you want to sound like you're informed about film. He's the well-loved director of stuff like Ex Machina, Civil War, Annihilation, which some people love, some people hate, and Warfare, which is our current obsession. But he got his start as a novelist and he wrote a little book called The Beach, which led to him being mates with the director who'd adapt that novel into a film of the same name.
Danny Boyle.
Right.
Right.
A guy called Danny Boyle. They did a few movies together. One called 28 Days Later, written by Alex Garland.
Right.
And another one, which you've heard of, Ben, called Sunshine.
He wrote Sunshine. That's complicated.
Isn't it?
That's quite conflicting.
Directed by Danny Boyle. So he started writing for Danny Boyle, 28 Days Later, and Sunshine.
Sunshine is difficult for me.
Right. I know why, but tell the listeners.
So if long-time listeners will have heard this before, but I have issue with Sunshine. I've got a giant 15-foot poster of this film because it's possibly the last time that I was so excited about a movie. I watched every trailer, every interview that I could get my hands on, all of this shit. I was desperate for it. Mm. I was watching everything, this, that, and the other. I was working at the Odeon. I was serving people popcorn, chatting to anyone and anyone about it that would listen. I'm just, Danny Boyle's got a new movie. Are you excited? This crazy shit. I'd already booked this fucking massive 15-foot poster. Yeah, that's mine. That's coming home with me.
Nice.
And I remember the one morning, Danny Boyle was going to be on a morning TV show. And I was like, oh, fuck yes, buddy. This was my Marilyn Manson going on to the Jonathan Ross show.
Amazing.
You know what I mean? That's how fucking excited I was for this. Danny Boyle on Good Morning Britain. Fuck yes, let's go.
He's just done 28 days later.
Just done 28 days later.
Let's see what
I'm obsessed with him. Let's fucking go. Where's my sunshine knowledge? Give me a little teaser on it. This dickhead sits on Good Morning Britain and goes, yeah, so the whole film is everyone dies, but it's about how they die. And I'm like, you cunt. I have never had a rug pull done to me through crypto, but this is the exact emotion that I imagine I would feel.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'd invested so much into this fucking film.
Yeah.
And he just went, well, here it is.
Here's the end of the movie, the week before you go see it.
It ruined how I was watching it, because when I was watching it and it was like, oh no, this guy's died. And I'm like, you're all dead. I just don't, there's no point investing in any of you.
Now, I've known that story for a long time.
Yeah.
Because we, like you said, long time listeners will know it.
Yeah.
And now if you're a new listener and you've not seen Sunshine, enjoy Ben's experience for yourself.
Yeah.
But
welcome to my world.
The thing that struck me researching this is, imagine being Alex Garland watching that same interview.
Let's play it out. You're Danny Boyle.
All right.
I'm Alex Garland. Ready? I'm going to phone you on the phone.
Hello?
Yeah, you're right, mate. How's it going?
What, geezer?
Yeah, buddy. Long time no see. Listen, just a quick one. Interview. Good Morning Britain.
Yeah, smashed it, fella.
Oh, mate, you did a great job. Yeah, well proud of you for that. Nice one. Going to get a lot of people to go watch the film, I think.
Oh, yeah? I hope so, mate. It's Good Morning Britain. Everyone watches that.
So anyway, dickhead, why didn't you just read the last three pages of the script out? You got me working my fucking heart out for this absolute belter of a script, and you revealed that everyone is dead. It's about how they die. What the fuck are we doing, buddy?
But you'd be fuming, right?
I'm going to hang up because I'm still in the skit, mate. I've worked myself up.
Danny Boyle's already on to his next project.
Danny Boyle's already on fucking Slumdog Millionaire, and I'm still phoning him. Answer it, dick.
So Alex Garland wrote this. He's a director in his own right. Ex Machina was like his big hit.
In his own right. He's a fucking titan.
He's a titan. Alex Garland said in an interview, I grew up reading Judge Dredd. The incredible writers and artists of 2000 AD were formative influences on me.
Mm-hmm.
My hope was to create a screen adaptation that would bring out all the story's adrenaline and realism and all the scale and spectacle of Mega City 1. Something hardcore, something edgy.
Something edgy.
Something edgy.
Something edgy. Okay.
So he writes the movie, goes into production with first-timer Pete Travis directing, director of this movie. The cinematographer they hire, Anthony Dodd-Mantle, is a fucking heavyweight because Garland knows Boyle.
Right.
They're mates because he's writing for Boyle all the time. He gets Danny's cinematographer, who's just won the Oscar for cinematography for Slumdog Millionaire.
He shoots this,
which is why it looks incredible.
Yeah.
And throughout the production, Garland would send script drafts to John Wagner, the original writer of Judge Dredd.
Incredible.
Who would revise some of the dialogue. And John Wagner said, after I met up with the gang, I thought to myself, these guys are genuinely serious. I was impressed by their honesty and the fact they cared enough to get me involved at such an early stage meant a lot to me. I knew they wanted to make the Judge Dredd I know. Garland, by the way, even named the tower, Peachtrees, after a restaurant.
In a 2000 AD comic?
No, after a restaurant in Shrewsbury.
No fucking way.
The Peachtree.
No way.
Yeah. Which is where he would meet up with John Wagner to discuss the script.
Bro, what is it with Shrewsbury?
Right?
I mean, I don't know if you new
to the
area.
I was there last week for the first time ever.
Yeah, and you were there today for a shoot.
Yeah.
I need to drop, you know Walking Dead?
Yeah.
Charlie Adlard, the original artist of Walking Dead, lives in Shrewsbury.
What is with Shrewsbury?
He's a drummer in a small band that regularly play in Shrewsbury. And I met him once in a music store whilst he was clutching a Marvel Lego set.
Yeah.
And he told me in painful detail for about 45 minutes how the Captain America in his Lego set is minorly different to any other Captain America that you can get in other Lego sets.
Oh, okay.
And it was fantastic. Shrewsbury, fucking rife with these guys.
Maybe, and we will do more research, but maybe somebody can get in touch and tell us why Shrewsbury is a comic artist hotspot. Is there a publisher nearby or a...
Oh, that's a good question. I've not
it
even...
It might just be that there's like 2000 AD is based in like
might
Kidderminster.
Might just be that like it is a cultural hotspot in the West Midlands because everything else is a literal cesspit.
Now, interestingly, during the making of this film, Pete Travis is removed.
Okay.
Carl Urban says, Carl Urban spoke about this movie in an interview and he said, a huge part of the success of Dredd is in fact due to Alex Garland. And what a lot of people don't know is that Alex Garland actually directed that movie.
It's a Garland movie.
Alex Garland's first film is not Ex Machina, it's Dredd. And I'll tell you why. Pete Travis is a TV director.
He is.
Does lots of TV.
Yeah.
Alex Garland is a film writer. He's only ever written films.
He has.
There's a big difference between who holds the reins in the world of TV and film.
Right.
Everyone listening, I'm sure you know, movies are led and commanded by the director. They have the ultimate say. It's their creative vision. In TV land, your director changes every episode.
Of course.
So it's the writer who holds the reins.
Ooh.
And they're like, oh, it's collaborative. It's lovely. Let's try and blend the two worlds.
Right.
And in Alex Garland's words, it ended up being an absolute mess.
Right.
Because there's no one captain.
Oh, God.
Pete Travis, the director, is expecting Alex Garland to step up into places that Alex Garland isn't expecting to step up into.
Right.
He's then being asked. It's just confusing.
Got you.
Who's the brain?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And Carl Urban's very right. Alex Garland kind of does finish the film. But to his credit, this is what Alex Garland said. It's a disservice to Pete Travis. He's the credited director. He did some fundamental things and he deserves that title. He was put in an absolutely impossible situation.
Right.
And retrospectively, the longer I've worked, the more ridiculous I think it was. After the experience of making Dredd, what I said is I'm not doing that again. Just let me do that job. Let's simplify this. It sounds like there's this kind of thing of like, oh,
right.
Pete Travis was taken off. It sounds like Pete Travis was given a dog shit brief.
Right.
And like, I don't know, just figure it out.
Yeah, but also, just super quick, just very quickly, Alex Garland's a fucking sweetheart.
He is, isn't he?
For that entire thing, he like he's not credited for this film at all.
No one,
Carl Urban's had to come out and be like, it is a Garland movie. And he's like, you know what, looking back on it, it was a mess. I feel so bad for the guy. Not only is this man incredibly fucking talented, not only is he an amazing writer, a fucking insane director, but he's also a sweetheart. Like a lovely, lovely sweetheart?
Disgusting.
Fucking eat my arsehole. Absolutely not. You don't get to be the fucking messiah of loveliness and an absolute creative genius. That's far too much for one person.
Too much. It's too much.
That's too much. Do you want to know the main thing that fucks me off about this film?
Oh, yeah. Of course I do.
Where's Dredd 2? What's going on with this? And I've got a question that I want to ask you. This is pure conjecture. This is a little seggy where I want us to fuck around a little bit.
Oh, new
seggy? New
seggy. Yeah.
Just want us to fuck around a little bit.
Okay.
And I just want you to mill on it and wonder where we could have gone.
Ooh, okay.
If this was a franchise. Right. So in the world of 2000 AD,
mm-hmm.
there's a thing called Dark Judges.
There are.
Which are fucking insane, right?
So for the listeners who haven't read 2000 AD.
I'm about to tell you a little bit. Okay. I'm about to give the listener a little taste of what we could have had, right? So Dredd has saved Mega City 1 multiple fucking times.
Yep.
He's stopped wars multiple fucking times. He's saved ours and all universes from total destruction at least once. At least
once.
Are
we saying he's Judge Jesus?
I'm saying he's Judge God.
Judge God.
Because holy shit. Dude, some of the storylines in this thing are insane. And I know like a lot of the listeners, ourselves, we're not going to be like mad into Judge Dredd. We're not going to know every storyline
like
that exists.
The second we put a second of this show on Instagram, we are going to have 50 comments an hour just going, I'm
terrified for the chafe epidemic that's about to erupt because of everyone smashing their glasses up the bridge of their nose. Excuse me. Did you know in episode 3, 4? All right, mate. But what I'm saying is pure conjecture corner.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a little trip down imaginary lane. What do you reckon we could have had in some sequels for Dread? That's the launching point. That's the stuff happened.
You mentioned a T-Rex called Satanus.
Yes, sir. So, okay. So there is a storyline within 2000 AD. It's a comic book run. It's the first run that went over 20 issues. The whole premise is that a virus has broken out in Mega City 2, which is on the west coast of America.
Right.
Now, as we've seen in this film,
between them is an irradiated wasteland.
Huge nuclear wars. Yep. They've ravaged Middle America to nothing. It's an absolute barren wasteland. So, a virus breaks out in Mega City 2. Their airports are overrun with the infected. Mm-hmm. They can't land a plane in Mega City 2.
Can't get across the irradiated wasteland.
You've got to walk it across, but who's going to do it? Who's going to set? What judges is Mega City 1 going to send across the wasteland to get to Mega City 2?
George Dredd.
In fucking deed. Team of judges in a couple tanks, couple fucking motorcycles. They're heading across the
driving
wasteland.
Across the wasteland.
Some of the stories I've made notes of what I would like to see in some sequels to this.
Right.
Right.
And they're all from this.
They are fucking insane. So some of the things that they come across in the wasteland, there's a thing called the Death Belt.
Right.
The Death Belt is an unpredictable air current that periodically flings swarms of huge mutated rats at human settlements.
It's fucking great.
Picture that as a settlement.
That's M. Night Shyamalan's The Happening.
Don't with fucking
rats.
Play with me right now. If M. Night Shyamalan ever hears this, this is the pitch for your next fucking film.
Right.
I will take irresponsible personal loans to try and help finance this.
M. Night, what's the pitch for your next movie?
Wind of Rats.
Wind of Rats. What are you going to call it?
Wind of Rats.
Wind of Rats. So that's just one thing that happens in this one comic book run. So the next one I'm going to bring to your attention is there is a clan of mutants in the Appalachian Mountains who have sworn violent revenge against the normies.
Oh, I love it.
Right?
I love it. My teen goth is just singing now.
I'm telling you, man. I'm telling you. This is a weird one, but I think it's a good little bridge between absurdity and moral correctness.
Oh, okay.
A set of Mississippi plantations using enslaved extraterrestrials, which Dredd's party ultimately liberate.
Right.
And in the process, they gain a new member of an aardvark-like alien named Tweak as a new companion.
Sorry. They liberate an enslaved person who is an extraterrestrial aardvark called Tweak.
Yes. That is correct, sir.
Where we're running into problems here, Ben, is I don't have very much money.
I know.
And I am on the verge of getting onto eBay and starting to buy 2000 AD comics. Because, they were in the newsagents when I was a kid.
Yeah, same.
And I remember flicking through them. And the thing is with serialized comics and newsagents is you always get too small a chunk of the story.
Exactly.
And you didn't know what was happening last week.
Exactly, yeah.
And your newsagent didn't get it every week. So you just get snatches of this looks insane. And then you'd never see it again for five weeks.
It was heartbreaking. I think this is what's triggered my hoarding in later life, because it's just sort of I've been desperately tracking down number three of Kabuki, apparently.
There we go.
One that's
the
not a resin
block.
The
local news agents caused a lifelong financial issue for you.
This is what it is, but I'm going to save you the financial issue, because there is a couple comics in this run that are no longer available. They got sued into oblivion, and as part of the settlement, they had to agree to never reprint these issues. So the few surviving issues are worth ridiculous money. So this is the premise. A region of Kansas, where the local McDonald's and Burger King franchises have mutated into fiefdoms.
Oh my God.
They routinely wage gang wars against each other, fighting over the new customers.
Oh my God.
They changed
turf war.
Yeah. But they changed nothing about the restaurants. They used the branding. They used the logos. In one scene, Ronald McDonald executes an employee with a shotgun for spilling a milkshake.
Oh.
Exactly. Dude.
Oh, I need it.
They're so fucking expensive now. It's unreal.
I mean, I understand that is going to cost more money than is reasonable to pay for some drawings of Ronald McDonald executing somebody.
But also. See, this is where I live and I fucking hate it.
Oh my God.
Dude, any of these sequels, give me the fucking McDonald's sequel. Give me the Burger King sequel. I want to see turf wars
between
fast food chains that are feral
with aliens.
With aliens.
So Mac and Mega City 1.
Mac and Mega City 1 will put in the fucking... The freed extraterrestrials are now fast food workers.
They've already got the straws.
Oh my God.
They've already got the straws for sucking up spilt milkshake.
Fucking... dude, Mac and Mega City 1, this is it. But just think of all the sequels we could have. I would pay so much fucking money for this.
Yeah.
So much money.
We're never getting one.
Heartbroken.
I know.
Fucking heartbroken.
We're never getting one at this point.
Pointless.
This movie flopped so hard that because they were readying it for a franchise.
Yeah.
Carl Urban was set.
Good.
Everyone was set. Alex Garland probably didn't want to come back because of the whole Pete Travis, you know, complication. Mm-hmm. But there were other directors that they could have got involved. This was right as Neil Blomkamp was like firing, you know? You could have gotten a sequel by him.
That would have been fucking amazing.
Wouldn't it? Wouldn't that have been beautiful?
So this flopped.
Flopped hard. And that's why we're never getting a sequel. What's important is why it flopped.
Okay.
So your average person on the street is not a comic book reader. Mm-hmm. Even if they are a comic book reader, the likelihood that they are a reader of British extreme 90s comics like 2000 AD...
with hyperviolence. And...
even smaller, right?
Yeah.
The only kind of reference point people had for what Judge Dredd was, mm-hmm. was the 1995 Sylvester Stallone movie, which was not a good time.
It's, right? Yeah.
And the marketing failed to properly explain that this was not a sequel or a remake. Mm-hmm. The trailers make it look incomprehensible. It's just a mid-budget sci-fi movie about some police officers.
I don't get the marketing of this film.
No.
Because I have vivid memories of this trailer, mm-hmm. and it being absolute wank.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, obviously for research for this, I watched the trailer after watching mm-hmm. the film and was like, oh my God.
That's not what I saw.
I remember this. Right. And remember thinking, bag of shit. Bag of shit.
Right.
Never watch it.
It's just, it's the future and the police officers are having a hard time.
Yeah.
It doesn't tell you that they're living in a totalitarian fascist regime.
No.
It doesn't tell you that it's going to be incredibly R-rated hyperviolent.
No.
It doesn't mention the pedigree of the writer who's just written 28 Days fucking Later.
It's insane. It's all slow-mo bullshit.
Yeah.
It sucks.
Even the poster, bearing in mind, people don't know who Judge Dredd is.
Right.
It's just Judge Dredd. Yeah. Staring at a mega block.
Right.
But again, if you're just the person on the street,
yeah.
that is a man staring at a council estate.
Yeah.
With a bin on his head.
Yeah.
And the tagline is, justice is coming. Which could just as well be describing a porn star getting damp thighs as it could this film.
It's the Bonnie Blue marathon. That's exactly what it is. Right. It's that.
And the final nail in the coffin.
Yeah.
3 motherfucking D.
Fucking 3D.
Do you remember the hellscape of the 2010s?
3D.
When movie studios were trying to convince us back to cinemas with the promise of a free headache with every movie?
Bro, I literally, the other day, I've got into a new habit, right? My new habit is I wake up early. Like, I'm talking like 5:30, 6 a.m.
What
and
the fuck?
I'll get myself set up for the day. I'll get my family set up for the day.
Yeah.
I rush down and I get myself a bowl of marshmallow Mateys.
Oh my God.
The cheapest ripoff of Lucky Charms you ever did see. And I'm telling you,
that's the most British version of marshmallow Mateys.
All right there, matey. Fancy a marshmallow. That's what it is.
You
right.
mean sweet wind chimneys? Oh, get yourself a bowl.
This one's tutti frutti flavour.
Hey.
So I'm getting my bowl of cereal. I get fucking like comfy. Mm-hmm. My dog's chilling out next to me and I whack on a film. And beautiful. I'm like, this is the best way to start a day ever.
Beautiful.
Did it the other day with Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man 1. And it was like a veil of fog had been lifted from my eyelids.
Yeah.
And I saw this movie in a whole new light.
Probably the first time you've watched a film in a decade not trying to not fall asleep.
It was fucking gorgeous. There was no stress.
Right.
There was no panic. There was no urgency of, I need to get this done. Mm-hmm. It's already done, mate. I did that at R5. Right now,
amazing.
It's 6:45 and it's Spider-Man time with my cereal. You know what I mean? So I've been doing this.
Min.
And I sat on my bed the other day. I've been going through my DVD collection, my Blu-ray collection, because I had a flood recently. My roof fucking
You lost
failed.
A load of collectibles.
And there's a... Dude, don't. I keep going through it periodically and it's almost like torture porn at this point. I'm just doing it when I want to feel sad. I was going through my collection and so many of them are write-offs, man. So I was going through and I was like, I came across Piranha 3DD. And I was like, this was a fucking hoot and a half. This was so stupid.
Yeah.
I remember it being ridiculous. I never remember buying it on DVD.
Right.
I was like, I'm going to give it a go.
How did it go?
There's two discs in this. Right.
Right.
There's one which is the 3D version and one which is the 2D version. And what's mint about, I don't know if it's every copy, but what's mint about the copy that I have It doesn't tell you which disc is which. It's a fucking gamble, buddy.
So you were just sat there going, "Are my glasses need cleaning?"
I wasn't wearing my glasses. Oh. And I was like, oh, this is a bit odd. And I was like, oh, hold on a sec. And I've put my cereal down. And I'm one of these guys. Soggy cereal is worse than death.
Yeah, it's the worst.
If I was Judge Dredd and you're eating soggy cereal, death.
Yeah.
That's my judgment, all right? The second that I rise to power, soggy cereal, illegal.
Yeah.
That's worse than cocaine. So I've put my cereal down, and I've, you know, glasses on, all this shit. I swapped the disc out and this, that, and the other. And I started watching the 2D version. And there's still fucking elements that are desperately trying to escape my shitty little 21-inch pink JVC TV with a DVD player built in, because I'm that guy.
Yeah, love it.
Right?
Love it.
It's desperately trying to escape my tiny screen, and I'm right. Stop.
Stop that.
Why?
Please stop that.
Why?
And when you look back at this film with all the glass and the slow-mo sequences...
What the fuck is it adding to my experience?
Nothing.
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 It's just... I struggle with depth perception as it is because of my fucking glasses. I'm like three Vision Express visits away from needing jam jar bottoms for fucking glasses.
At least in this one, because you've got Anthony Dodd Mantle doing the cinematography.
It looks pretty.
It looks pretty, and it still works as a 2D shot. He's considered both formats.
He has.
Rather than, I imagine, to put on a 3DD, they were like, this is a 3D film.
Fucking,
but
yeah.
it was the thing at the time that the studios were like, this is what we have to push.
Yeah.
And they pushed it as Dread 3D.
Yeah.
And so everyone went, sucks. I don't want a headache. I'm not going to go
exactly.
and see that.
Yeah.
And so it just absolutely died on its ass. And we'll never get another chance to have this franchise.
There was one bit of marketing that I remember vividly seeing. Right. I remember it because this is, I'd just come back from Japan. I'd only been back for like a couple of years. And I remember seeing like a massive black poster with just what I thought was a graffitied M
right
on it. And I was like,
what is that?
What the fuck is this? Justice is coming. What the fuck does this mean? Blah, blah. And I was like, it looks like gang war.
Yeah.
I'm not really into that shit.
Not in that vibe.
It's the fucking M for the visor on his helmet. And I'm like, that's such a niche.
It's ridiculously
that's
niche.
That's such a niche marketing point.
It's the sort of thing where you go, everyone knows who this is. No one knows who this is.
No one knows who Judge Dredd is. But less so, people, no one knows what his fucking helmet looks like.
Right. Right.
Do you know what I mean? So an abstract, weird, artistic interpretation.
They're marketing the film to the people that were going to see it anyway.
100%. Yeah, 1,000%. Like, you could have just sent out a mass text that said Dread 7 PM.
Yeah.
The nerds would have been there.
Right, right.
That's the extent of the marketing. Save the money.
Right.
Put it into the fucking
sequel.
Explain
this world.
Yeah.
And sell this world for what it is. They didn't do that.
They didn't. But I've got a counterpoint to this, buddy. And I wholeheartedly appreciate everything you've said so far. I love it to pieces. This has been a wild ride. The rebuttal to that is why this is one of the best comic book movie adaptations of all time.
Oh, I mean, I think I agree with you already.
This film is such a straightforward entry into this brand new comic book universe for many, many people. There is no background needed.
No.
You can never have picked up a Judge Dredd comic book in your life and you understand exactly what is happening at every given point.
Yep.
There's no massive exposition dumps. There's no weird, obscure side characters. There's no villains that you're never going to heard of, like Sandman. You know what I mean? There's none of this bullshit. Yep. There's no cramming 15 villains into one movie because you're trying to get
this is
the
not
whole
Spider-Man
IP.
3.
There's nothing in it.
No.
There's none of this. You don't need any prior knowledge. The story... which is so incredibly local.
Yeah.
You've got Dredd, you've got Anderson, and you've got Mama.
Yeah.
They're the three characters you need to know about for this film, and you are introduced to all of them immediately.
Yep.
They have enough exposition that you know what they stand for, what side of the law they're on, and how fucking far they're willing to go for their perceived...
version of justice.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Right. We don't need any origin stories.
Nope.
We don't need exposition dumps. Anderson... is with Dredd on a ride along for her judge examination.
Yep, that's it.
If she passes, she's a judge.
Yeah.
If she don't,
she's not.
She ain't.
Yeah.
No big world ending scenarios, no otherworldly threats to the whole human race. It's a ride along to a drug bust that everyone is qualified to be a part of.
And it allows the film the space to show you who these people are.
Exactly.
Doesn't need them to take the time to tell you.
Bro, the breathing room in this fucking film is unparalleled.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It is such a breath of fresh air, especially nowadays when I feel chokeholded by anything even remotely related to something that I love.
Right.
I really like Star Wars. Here's 11 fucking TV shows that are 9 seasons long and explain everything that you've never wanted to know about.
You got free time because you don't now.
Oh, yeah. Cheers for that, mate. Oh, you like the Marvel Universe, do you? Here's 144 fucking TV shows that feed into the cinematic universe. Yeah. But also, we're just going to restart this bullshit because it did great years ago. We fucked it. So it's starting again over here. But now you need 11 more TV shows to fucking sign you in, buddy.
None of that.
This whole story is so fucking familiar.
Mm-hmm.
It's so relatable, but it's just far enough removed from actuality that you understand where it's going. You know what's going to happen. But you're just along with the ride. It's fucking dystopian Dirty Harry.
Yeah.
It is. The entire thing is Dirty Harry. There is one bad person.
Mm-hmm.
You need to call on like the biggest, baddest person who's going to, A, be a little bit fucking free and loose with the rules just to get the end result that you need. And he's going to have his fucking sidekick, Chico. Chico's going to come along for the ride.
It does. It does what every good sci-fi should.
Yeah.
And it balances the madness of its world.
It does.
With the madness of its characters. Mad Max. Speaking of madness, is a great example.
Fucking incredible example.
The Mad Max Tom Hardy one. The world is so insane that they have to limit the plot to it's a car chase there and a car chase back.
Yeah.
And the rest of the film, we need the room for world building
and
100%. Character development.
Definitely.
The same with this one. It goes, the world is mad. And in order to give you time to ingest this world, it's two coppers locked in a bad building.
That's it.
They've got to get out.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Do they want to get out or do they want to fight their way out?
Yeah.
That's the plot.
Yeah.
Because if we made it more complicated than that, we'd have to skip over the world, and the world's the interesting thing here.
This is, dude, I'm so happy that we're at this point.
Right.
You know when like we get into films that are like they're trying to be something that they're not, and I get caught up on the in-universe lore?
Dark City.
Okay, Dark City is a great example.
Too many things in the bag.
Too many things.
You don't let anything shine.
Objectively, fun film.
Yeah.
Up until Act 3 when you're spoon-fed every bit of information you're ever going
to
need.
Because they have to in order to tie anything
together. It's too big. There's too much. There's not enough time. That film could be 9 hours long and you'd still have to have an exposition dump from Kiefer Sutherland at some point. Do you know what I mean?
You would.
It's the extended edition of Lord of the Rings plus. Like that's what you need. This, on the other hand, dude, fucking unreal. Over the years, though, mate, this has gained popularity.
Good.
Just skyrocketing. It's become a cult classic in the fact that even new watchers, myself included, avid fans immediately, because of we have been so spoiled with our comic book universes. We've got the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which was absolute perfection.
Until it wasn't. Yeah.
Then we had the DC Universe,
which was always awful.
Pile of shit. It got good. And now it's going Marvel, I'm kind of for. I don't know where it's going to go.
We'll see how James Gunn's Superman turns out.
But the fact is, we've got so much of it.
Yeah.
And it always sticks to these fucking weird things where you have to watch everything around it. You need so much context.
I could show this
to my sister who fucking hates comic books. Yep. I could show it to my sister and she would go, fucking hell, that's all right.
Yeah.
And I know she'd say that because she likes action movies. The only thing that this is missing is the Schwarzenegger quips at the end of stuff. You know what I mean? There's a couple of little one-liners in there.
There's a few.
But they're comic book accurate.
They are. They really are.
And that's the glorious thing about it, because there was a couple that nearly lost me and I was like, surely not. Bit of research. Holy shit, that's great.
Yeah,
fucking dank. It's like a throwaway one-liner from a side quest in 77 that no one's ever going to get unless you're like an avid fan and have read since day one.
But it catches everything about the original comic.
It does.
And brings it lovingly to screen. And you cannot say that this does not accurately represent Judge Dredd.
Yeah. It's the perfect adaptation.
And I'll tell you what's so perfect about it. Dear listener, I know we put a spoiler warning at the front, but nothing Ben and I have talked about has really spoiled this film.
No.
All the things that are good about this film are there for you to enjoy unspoiled because it's the way it looks, the things that happen.
Yeah.
You know the general curve of the plot.
Yeah.
Realistically, you would have known that from Act 1 anyway. You know that the character called Judge Dredd is not going to die at the end of this film.
Yeah.
Go watch this movie because it is an absolute gem.
It truly is.
It's only going to get better with more people knowing that it exists and that it's worth loving.
I would fucking love Carl Urban to come back and do this again because Jesus Christ.
The man acts with his mouth.
It's magic, yeah, what that man does.
With one facial expression.
But the facial expression is so source material accurate. Yeah. And it's insane that he's committed this much. I've got a little thing here from Carl Urban says, not to knock any film that's been before. There's been one. Not to knock any film that's been before, but I was pretty disappointed when I saw the full face of Judge Dredd in the previous movie. That's not my Dredd. And it's not the way the character was written. He is supposed to be faceless representative of the law, and I think that that's part of his enigma. It's what makes him interesting and cool. You wouldn't get to the end of a Sergio Leone Western and go, God, I didn't even know the character's name. It's fucking irrelevant.
It's irrelevant. Doesn't matter what Dredd looks like.
No one cares.
Carl Urban smashes it because in the realm of actors who work with masks, got a little list that I did. I wasn't going to put it in. But Stallone, good example.
Sure.
Doesn't bother. They just take the mask off.
They have to.
Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
Iron Man. You've got helmet cam. Anytime there's action,
yeah,
you get to see what the character looks like. He gets to express with his face because of helmet cam.
Yeah, yeah.
Tom Hardy is Bane.
Bane.
He's got his eyes.
Yeah. All upper face. Very emotive.
Right. Hugo Weaving plays V from popular movie V for Vendetta.
No facial emotion.
No facial emotion at all. Yeah. But he's got a really eloquent, flowery dialogue.
Very flamboyant.
Constantly talking.
Yeah.
Really verbose.
Yeah.
Carl Urban's playing the most stoic,
yep,
concise, hyper-repressed man in the world of fiction.
Mad repressed.
With a mouth that has one very famous expression.
Yes.
That can't change.
Yeah.
And still manages to get all of the emotional beats of the character, of which there are some, perfectly expressed.
He does.
How? How?
I know.
That's magic.
I know. It's a fucking masterclass in how to be a super anti-hero, which is incredible.
I wanna wrap up with what I think this film really means.
Hit me with what it really means.
Because in universe wise, this ain't that, all right? This is not the life lessons.
No, God no.
Right? But I think the film itself, as an object in our world, actually says a lot. For me, Dredd's a perfect film. For me, a film is perfect if it achieves everything it tells me it's going to do. It provides a mission statement, gives me a clear scope of like what it's promising to provide me in Act 1. And then by Act 3, I've got that in like wet bucket loads.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was all executed above and beyond the standard, and it's a perfect film. But just because something is perfect doesn't mean it's going to succeed.
100%.
This proves that. Because there's one element missing from my equation, and that's timing. Like,
that's interesting.
This gets the character right, it gets the pace right,
does.
Gets the visuals right.
Does.
It abides by its own rules, unlike Dark City.
It really does. It really does.
Provides a tidy, tied up story that's really well paced.
Yeah.
But the story it's telling of a totalitarian cyberpunk dystopia came out right at the end of Obama's first term.
Yeah. I mean, There's worse times to be alive.
Right. Especially now.
Like right now.
Right. Yeah. I feel like this telling of the country you live in will do what the fuck it wants when it wants.
Oh, 1,000%.
Perfect now, huh?
Bro, if this dropped today, it would be an absolute belter.
And the reason I think that that's really nice in its own, I'm going to staple a silver lining onto the complete mistiming of this film, is it means that if you, dear listener, have had something in your life that you've been really proud of, that's fallen flat on its face, it might not be you. It might just have been timing. Because this is a mint film.
Yeah.
And we can look at it now and we can appreciate how mint it is. Something not succeeding doesn't mean it's not good. And 100%. So the things in your life that haven't succeeded, on their own merits, might still be great.
They might be.
Don't take the success or the lack of success as, oh, well, there was no merit there. Just go, maybe it wasn't the right time. And that's a lovely thing.
That's lovely.
Right?
It might still be shit. It might just be that what you've done is shit.
It's probably shit. It might just be shit. But also look at the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It might be the time. It might be the time. What about if you'd have done that yesterday?
Exactly. We are wildly over time.
Let's go. Let's do, what are we wrapping up with? What are we doing?
We can do game or we can do comic corner. We can't do both.
Let's do comic corner.
Let's do comic corner. Right. These are all going to be from the same reel.
They are all from the same reel.
We had one about Dark City. It was me sat in a car pretending to be a conspiracy nerd. The level of pretense may not have caught everyone.
No.
Again, it was the Starship Troopers of our Instagram feed.
Legitimately.
A lot of people took it very, very seriously.
We keep getting DMs from fucking conspiracy bros.
Being
like, yeah, I found my podcast. And it's like, you fucking ain't.
No, you really haven't.
Please,
bro.
Keep looking. Please. I've got one here. I've got one from TikTok, right? And this one confused me. I need you to explain it. This one says, more American reaching, laughing face, still super famous in my country. Do you just not get the good films in America? Do you sell them overseas? Just don't watch them yourself, laughing face.
Yeah.
I don't know what this means because I read this as it saying that you're American.
I am.
And that you've not got this film in America because America sell the movies abroad.
But don't watch them, yeah.
But don't watch them. But
I'm an American man talking about a film that my country made that I didn't watch because it was just sold elsewhere.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. A, you're not American. B, this film is known by a lot of Americans.
Right.
And C, it's weirdly xenophobic.
Right.
Like, I don't understand why.
I looked him up and he lives in Palestine. So I just went, do you know what?
Have this
free
one.
Pass. Yeah, do you know have what, this mate?
One. Go for it.
Go for it.
You do you.
Go for it.
Accept, agree. Move on.
I got one here from, I'm not going to name this person.
Okay.
This was on Instagram. Mm-hmm. They said, Dark City is a truth bomb. When we die, we are shown a god and a soul guide that trick us into reincarnation.
Stop it.
But we don't know that we can tune and blow them all away. You create Soul Beach when you discover that you can tune. Soul Beach.
Soul Beach.
Soul Beach. Yeah.
Yeah. Shell Beach. Yeah. He loves that film. Okay. A few things.
Yeah.
A few things. What?
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of that.
Just what?
We got another one.
Go on.
Dark City isn't forgotten.
Okay.
It's just not as original as everyone acts.
Right.
And its director turned into a total hack. All of his best visual motifs are stolen from Herzog's Nosferatu. And when that well ran dry, it was nothing but slop for 25 years.
Wow.
Okay. Is everything all right at home, bud?
I don't know what's going on, man.
Like, it's
that's
just
a lot.
It's just a little film.
Someone give him a cuddle.
Right.
Fucking hell.
Right. Well, I think the one that tires me the most.
Go on.
And I'm not going to name these people either, is because every time someone comments, it pings the phone.
Yeah.
And it's been going for about a week now.
Yeah, cheers for that, dickhead.
I'm sorry. I didn't know. Like, and it's not, no one's listening to the podcast off the back of it.
Yeah.
It's purely on Instagram that this is doing something.
You've just hit every conspiracy knobhead on Instagram.
Who's got no interest in listening to a movie podcast?
No one cares about the movie. They're just sort of like, oh yeah.
Do you know what they do care about? It's just commenting. Dark City.
Don't.
So the number of times my phone will buzz and I go, is it Ben? Is it my sister? Oh no, it's someone who's logged online and they've gone.
The amount of time I have to keep my phone on loud because of like family situations. I need to be alert, and if something's going on, I need to be available. My phone's on loud. Do you know what noise Instagram makes? Boop boop.
And then,
do you know how many times a day I'll be at work and I'll be really busy and my phone goes boop 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 boop. Do you know what sound my fucking WhatsApp and what my text message? And do you know what all of this, every single fucking notification, boop, boop, and I'm checking my phone like fucking, like I'm literally.
Is someone on fire?
Bro, I put my phone on vibrate the other day. I was getting phantom vibrations because I'm so fucking used to checking my phone every 38 seconds. Hate it.
Yeah.
Also, love it because it's very funny sometimes.
It is.
Sometimes I'll be in a little bit of a panic and I'm like, oh no, what's going on? And I'll open it. It'll be sort of like, Illuminati are taking over human souls. And I'm like, I'll put it away. And then I carry on serving coffee to people about to go watch a film. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, yeah, this is great.
Do you know what's not so good?
Go on.
Boop, boop. Dark City.
Yeah. Fucking sucks.
You've just named the film.
Yeah, well done,
like,
mate.
Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, good.
What is happening?
Good.
Right. We've
all
got...
Right, we're well over.
What are you rating Dread 2012?
Objectively, it's an 8. As a film.
Fair.
As a film, it is objectively an 8 because it's fucking
it's
so well...
It's an 8 for anyone.
It's an 8 for anyone because it's so well put together.
Where you come from, it's an 8 for anyone.
It's so well put together. It's so well written.
Mm-hmm.
The cinematography is fucking insane.
Beautiful.
It's gorgeous.
Pacing,
the slow-mo shots of the hyper gore.
I agree.
CGI is a bit ropey in places, but that's fine.
It's 2012. Come
2012.
On.
Who cares?
We all saw the film. It's John Cusack driving through a donut. Do you know what I mean?
It's
got a fifth of the budget.
Is it?
It is. Come on.
Objectively, is it?
Objectively, it is.
All right. So it's an 8. It's such a well-put-together film. It's incredible.
I agree.
For me personally, it was an 8 when I first watched it, mm-hmm. and then I did a bit of research into the source material, because just for curiosity purposes, Marvel and DC have ruined my trust. Star Wars has ruined my trust.
Yeah.
Disney have actually shit on my entire childhood.
You're like, is this actually what was there?
Yeah.
It is.
Fat 10.
It's a fat 10.
Fat 10.
It's a fat 10.
The love and care that have gone into this, otherworldly.
Yeah.
It's unheard of.
We're tuning, bro.
We're tuning.
It's an 8 for everyone and it's a fat 10 for both
Illuminati
of us.
Illuminati are changing my memories.
Fuck off. We're at the end of the show. Come on.
Fat 10. You, fat 10?
Fat 10.
All right, sick. Guys, I'm so sorry, but this is it. This is the end of the show.
It's the end of the show.
We love you all so fucking much. Thank you so much for the support. It genuinely means the world
it
to
really
us.
It really does.
Keep reaching out. Keep sending us the emails. Keep sending us the Instagram messages. I fucking love when you guys get in touch and it's not Dark City. So just, you know, if we can drown that out, that'd be great.
That'd be lovely. If you want more show, there's more show on Patreon. Episodes are usually, well, they're running about half an hour longer each week now.
Yeah, they are. We got exclusive episodes up there now,
episodes.
Too.
Exclusive episodes.
Pope's Exorcist is up there.
Yeah.
I think everyone
the
missed
Warriors.
It. But it's up.
Yeah, The Warriors is on there.
Yeah.
We can do Labyrinth soon. We've got exclusive videos. It's all on there. It's £1 a month. Go join it. Ben's now going to wrap up the thoughts, themes, and feelings of Dread 2012 into a little Monday motivational pep talk.
All right.
To help you get through your week. While I just tell you to consume.
I think where we're at the moment is Anderson in the movie looks at every situation and can apply context to the justice. She knows that the punishment needs to fit the crime, but you need to understand the root cause of the crime. You can't just treat the symptoms, you have to treat the problem. She gets this, and that's great. In that universe, that's a psychic mutant. In our universe, that should just be a person. So if there's a choice of being Dread or a psychic mutant, I would choose the mutant every day.